Connecting.
Stories.
Sound.
Science.
Technology.
Documentaries.
RN.
Hey, Natasha Mitchell with you for Life Matters. It's our Friday talkback on Radio National. What's your relationship to your phone? Do you have a mobile phone? If you do, is it a smartphone, one of those internet-enabled gadgets which guide many of our lives these days? More than 50% of Australians, well more by some estimates. Clearly, many of us adore them. They're a bit like a portable office and entertainment suite rolled into one. The internet, apps, cameras, navigation, games, social media, movies, all at our fingertips. But today we're asking you if we might be loving them too much. Are you grafted to your phone? Do you sleep with it? Come on, own up. Do you take it on holidays and endlessly check your email? Or are you looking on, questioning the sanity of the crowds of commuters, all head down, lost in the world inside their phones, oblivious to the material world? Have the boundaries between work and play become so blurred as to be non-existent for many? Could all this compact connectivity be fundamentally changing who we are, not just how we communicate? At what costs and gains? That's what we're discussing today. Or are you, and we'll be interested to hear from you, are you someone who's holding off getting a smartphone? You relish not being hyper-connected to everything and everyone every moment of the day. In fact, you might not have a mobile phone at all. So talk to us. The number to ring today is 1300 225 76. That's 1300 call RN, 1300 225 76. Callers in South Australia and the Northern Territory, you'll need to call now. Listeners in WA, please do talk to us via our listener line 02833 1430, 02833 1430. You can leave a message there. Our website, you can leave messages there, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. On Facebook, search RN Life Matters if that's your shtick. And our Twitter name is @RNLifeMatters. Use the hashtag, #ABCRN, and we'll be tracking it as we go throughout the discussion. Look, today I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Pesce. Mark is perhaps best known to you and to ABC audiences nationwide as one of the panellists on the long-running show The New Inventors, but he's got oodles of strings to his bows. He's an inventor, a writer, a futurist, a thinker, creator, a delver, and a smartphone obsessive. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
Let's locate ourselves first in this universe of telephony, smartphones. What is a smartphone? Some people don't use that term.
Well, you can think of the earlier generation of phones. Sort of the first phones that we all got are sort of what people call feature phones now, right? So they basically, you can make a call on them, you can send a text message and read them. There might be a little bit of a calendar or something like that, but they don't do very much. They do a couple of things, and they do that very well, and they're very simple, and they're now quite cheap. You can get them for $30 or $40. Mm. Around 5 years ago, you started to see the introduction, first from Nokia, of phones that actually had a lot of computer power with them, very big screens that were very, you know, rich and could actually shoot full motion video and could play back all sorts of music and had a broadband wireless internet connection. And that's the key thing. So 3G, so that they could actually talk to the network quite quickly. So that means that you could not only play music, but you could maybe stream music or stream, for instance, Radio National.
Yes, please.
Over the airways so that you could have it in your pocket and it would act like a radio even though there was no radio tuner. And most significantly, I think for most people, there was this idea of little programs that you could install on the phone, what we now call apps. Mm. And so that the phone didn't just do one thing or a few things, it really did almost anything you could dream up, in which case the phone started to become a lot like what we think of as a computer, where if you want to get the computer to do something different, you put new software on it. Well, the same thing is true for a smartphone.
Mark, I want to do a little exercise with you. I want you to imagine your day. And regular kind of work day for you, which is always an interesting day. And I want you to locate where you are with your smartphone. So let's start with waking up.
So right now I'm waking up probably because the alarm has gone off on the smartphone, because I'm using it as my alarm. And that's about two-thirds to three-quarters of everyone who has a smartphone is now using it as their alarm device. And so it spends the night on the bedstand, it gets charged up, and it wakes us up in the morning.
Okay, so you, and did you sleep with your phone? How close is it? Is it on your pillow?
It's not on the pillow, it's on the bedstand. People do vary. Sometimes on the bedstand, sometimes it's on the other side of the room. I think it also depends on how far you want to travel if there's a call in the middle of the night.
Okay, so it's looking a little bit dodgy, the weather out there. What do you do now?
In fact, I may actually hit the weather app and find out if it's raining, or actually how, for instance, this morning in Sydney, how cold it is outside and why I'm sitting here freezing under my covers and whether I'm going to get out of bed.
You've got dressed, you've had a shower, you've exercised your material rights, had breakfast, you've walked out the door, the traffic's looking shocking as ever. Then what do you do?
Well, then I use the map app and figure out first off what the traffic is like, because that's displayed in the map app, and then figure out when the next bus is going to come or whether I should take the train, because I have apps that will do both of those for me. So I can basically figure out my flight path using the apps.
How is this different from what you might have done a few years ago?
I would have done this all by the seat of my pants a few years ago. I wouldn't have had any of this information at hand, and so I would have been making decisions based on past experience and guessing. Oh, it doesn't look too bad out there. Okay, I guess I'll risk it.
You've got to dinner time. You've made it to dinner time. The phone's been grafted to your phone all day. You're running late. The options?
There are no options. You text ahead and say, "Hi, I'm running late."
We don't run late anymore. We're just delayed.
That is correct. So, and we don't really even think about that anymore. It's funny because I'll be talking to a class in a couple of months, and I'll be talking to them about my first trip to Sydney, which was in 1997, and I was with a group of people who were delayed for dinner. And I was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then one of the friends pulled out a phone and sent a text message to the other friends. Because in Australia in 1997, half of everyone owned a phone. It wasn't true in America. And so at that point in time, the behavior of everyone had already changed. And we'd made the seamless transition into basically just sort of keeping each other aware of where we were when we needed to be aware of it. And you basically now know where everyone is who you care about, or you can find out really quickly. That's completely different than it was 20 years ago.
Unless the power runs out on your phone, and that is a bit of a nightmare. Do you ever, you're an inventor, you're a creative. Do you ever allow yourself to simply look out the window rather than tweet the world around you?
Yes, there's always a bit of a tension around that. I took holidays in Phuket not very long ago, and every night there was a battle between watching the beautiful sunset that was setting and taking pictures and tweeting them. And at times I would watch myself taking these pictures because these pictures are beautiful, and oh my goodness, I want to share this with my friends. And then, wait a minute, you need to sit back and just watch this beautiful sunset.
Exactly. We're going to come to that later in the show. Australians have been early adopters of mobile phones, right from the go-get, haven't we? But smartphones, this is rather extraordinary if we look at the figures that are emerging.
There's a report that came out from Google late last year that indicated that Australia and Singapore led the world in smartphone adoption, so that around the end of last year, half of all Australians owned a smartphone. By around the end of next year, it'll be closer to 85%.
You suggest, Mark, that we need mobile phones to bring order to our lives. And I imagine that a whole stack of people are going to disagree with you. That, in fact, we need to switch them off in order to bring order to our lives, some people will argue.
I think that both of those statements are true. That's the interesting thing, is that...
Me too.
I think that there's... We live our lives very well coordinated now because we can, because we have the connectivity between ourselves that allows us to do that. But of course, all of that connectivity also means that there's more and more demands on our time. And so we do need to be able to carve out that space where there aren't going to be any demands made. And it's all a matter of how people do it. I have friends who declare what they call technology Sabbaths. And from Friday night to Saturday night, the phones are turned off and stuck in a drawer. The computers are turned off. They play with the kids.
Do you do that?
I meditate every morning, so that's my time. And so everything is turned off, you know, for an hour, and I go and I'm with myself. Now, when I actually went on holidays, what I did is I unplugged the email. I didn't unplug the Twitter, because that would have been a bridge too far for me, I think.
There are limits.
There are limits to how disconnected I want to be. But I unplugged the email, and it was the first time I'd been off email for a week in a very long time.
Now, people who don't have smartphones hear about all this conversation about apps, and there are millions of them. What are they, and how have they changed your life? We've got a sort of sense of that. But, for example, some people are now monitoring their vitals, literally, using apps now, aren't they?
So apps are basically just little programs, like they would be on a computer. And they're small, they're generally cheap. You know, some of them, a lot of them are free, some of them can cost a few dollars. And they tend to do just one thing, and they tend to do that very well. And if you want to do something else, you get another app. So people's phones are getting very sort of cluttered with all these different apps. And, you know, on Christmas Day, I was staying with the friends that I visit on Christmas every day in Coogee. And at 4 p.m., my friend's phone goes off. And I said, oh, what's that? He says, oh, I've got to check my pulse. And he pulls out his phone. And he holds up his finger to the camera on his phone. And the light on the camera goes on and shines into his finger. And through some sort of magic of photographic analysis, the camera is actually able to read his pulse by the light that's being shown back from his fingertip.
Now, how has that changed his life fundamentally, though? Some of these apps are literally gadgets and gimmicks, aren't they?
Oh, no, that's very important for his health. His doctors told him to actually monitor his heart rate to make sure it's not too high. So that's actually very important for him in order to monitor his exercise level, his overall fitness level, his anxiety level. So all of these different things are actually being summed up there. So he can then make changes in his own behavior.
Real time.
Uh-huh. What we're seeing is there's a number of new devices. Nike is slowly rolling out something, and it's a band that goes around your wrist. And it sits there and basically just is with you as you make all your movements, as you walk around, as you burn energy. And it then will feed that data into your smartphone. Your smartphone will go, you know, you maybe should go for another walk today. You haven't burnt enough out, or maybe you're going to need to drink more water because you've been doing a lot of exercise. All of these different things.
This is the Life Matters Friday Talkback. Mark Pechet is my guest this morning. He's an inventor, futurist, writer. We're talking about smartphones and whether we love them too much. Have we become codependent on these little devices in our pockets? And the number to call is 1300 225 76. That's 1300. Call RN, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter name is @RNLifeMatters, and the hashtag to use so we can track you is #ABCRN. Let's come to Julian in Tasmania. Julian, you're an passionate technology lover. You're having a little bit of a personal shift now.
Absolutely. I'm turning into a Luddite, which I'm happy about.
A Luddite? You're going that far?
Well, look, I was part of the dot-com 1.0 revolution, and I was totally into it. And these days, I'm completely the opposite. I've moved to Tasmania, and I just prefer not to be involved in technology that much.
Why is that?
Well, it consumes us, and there's other things in life.
Thank you, Julian. Indeed. I think we'll probably have quite a lot of Radio National listeners resonating with that one. Pauline in Victoria. Pauline, you're a tram commuter.
I am. And when I'm on the tram, I often sketch people. Now, in the past, when I was sitting sketching them, even if I was sitting behind them, they became aware quite quickly and they'd start moving. But these days, when they've got their headphones on, they've lost that sixth sense that says they're being watched, and I can do much better sketches because they just sit.
How wonderful. Except all the sketches will have these sort of profiles of people looking downward, won't they?
Well, that's true. That is a disadvantage. it's an interesting thing in terms of that safety, personal safety that comes from, you know, you become aware when you're being watched. I think it blocks that safety.
Oh, that's so interesting. Pauline, thank you very much for that call. Mark Pesci, this is interesting, isn't it? We kind of have retreated within another world, a kind of digital ether, at the cost of losing connection with the world around us in many ways.
And this is, you see people, and I think we're probably all guilty of this as well, tweeting as they, or texting as they walk down the street. Mm. And we'll sort of look up every so often. Sometimes that's enough, sometimes that's not enough. You see people walking into traffic who are texting or walking in front of a taxi cab, which is something that I did one day. Amazingly, I'm still here to talk to you. And it's because, yeah, the task is engaging and the aim of the task, which is connecting, is engaging. And so it's pulling us in because we're trying to connect. And yeah, that's pulling us away from being connected to the world that's immediately around us.
One of my favorite ideas in philosophy, Andy Clark is a fantastic philosopher of the mind, and he talks about this idea, Mark, of the extended mind, that we kind of cognitively couple with our pieces of technology and they become a part of our psyche, part of our cognitive scaffolding. Mm. So our pen, our camera, the old map. The old A to Z map that we might have used is all part of our extended mind, but somehow we have become entirely dependent on our phones in some sense. They have become a replacement for our memory, for example. I don't remember phone numbers anymore.
No. McLuhan talked about this idea of technologies as amputations, that every technology gave you something, but it took something away at the same time, and that there was just no way around that. And so, yeah, some bits of our memory that we used to keep phone numbers. Mind you, there were a lot less phone numbers you needed to remember a few years ago. Now, forget about it. But it's all the phone numbers. It's all the other trivia that you needed to remember. It's now you just need to remember where it's stored on your phone. You don't need to remember, which can be a problem in itself.
It can be a problem because people don't back up. And even when I've tried to back up, I've still lost a whole stack of data. Yeah. I've lost text messages of friends who have died. I've lost photos that were important to me. And I know we're all meant to have a digital backup strategy, but sometimes they fail too. And so in a sense, we're invested. They've become our diaries, in a sense, in a way that we might have written things down and had a little record of our personal archive, our personal history. Things have changed.
And this is, I think, going to be a much more sort of pronounced trend. It's this idea of live streaming, that the phone is there to be able to help you record, capture, collate, and process through all of the experiences that you have. And the phones are going to get better and better at this over the next period of time. We have seen, I think particularly over the last year and a half, this idea that there's a lot of live streaming going on when there's a demonstration in Syria or in Egypt or in Oakland, that you can actually sort of be there in real time because someone's got a smartphone, it's going out over the mobile broadband, and then it's coming to you directly. And so it gives you this sense that there's presence around. So it's not just I'm capturing it for myself. In some sense, I'm capturing it for the world.
You're an educator as well.
Yes.
Has people's attachment to their smartphones, your students, changed the vibe of the classroom, changed the dynamic?
You have to be careful as a teacher now because a lot of the ways that a classroom used to run aren't really working that way anymore. So if you sort of sit up there and act as the overall authority about something, well, your students could be on Wikipedia in the back of the room and checking your facts, and they'll correct you when you're wrong.
Googling in real time.
And there's another case I know of as a school teacher in Victoria who was screaming at a student for having not done their homework. And as the screaming is going on, the student pulls out their phone, dials a number, talks to what's presumably a parent and says, you listen to her, and holds it up to the teacher screaming. And so all of a sudden, the parent has been inserted in this student-teacher relationship. And so that changes the dynamic of that as well. So now teachers are, in a sense, are dealing with the fact that the kids are now consistently tethered to their parents. And so it has really changed all of those dynamics.
Absolutely. Can I read some of our Facebook comments? Kate has written, I'm resisting as a self-preservation tactic. Not having the strongest of wills, a smartphone would mean I'd disappear into the internet, never to be found again. My fear, though, is that stupid phones will cease to be manufactured and smartphones will be all that is available. This is a fear some people have. At some point, it will be inevitable that smartphones are the only option.
Oh, yeah. I think within 10 years, there really won't be feature phones anymore.
Can I read another one? Maria writes, I have an iPhone and a BlackBerry and somehow still manage to smell the roses and look at the green of the trees. The phone is an inanimate object. How it changes how you function depends entirely on your choice. Do you think we have a choice? You know, we're creatures of compulsion, and we think we've got more control over our attention with these devices. We get to sort of attend a board meeting and look at our email at the same time. Mm. We make choices about what we attend to in the moment. But in fact, I wonder whether we're having our attention robbed from us in the moment.
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think that there is some degree of choice here, but I think that it's probably something that we need to cultivate. It's like a sort of willpower that we need to build up, that there is a whole sense of appropriateness around this. And this comes back into this idea of the classroom, because one of the reasons that a lot of this is going on is because parents haven't really taught kids any what I would call hygiene around connectivity. Mm-hmm. And that's because the parents don't have any themselves. They're checking their text messages
still
at the dinner
about
table.
What it means. What's the sort of hygienic state of connectivity? What does that look like?
Well, I think it's very much all around balance. It's around being able to focus when you need to focus and being able to play when you need to play. And being able to know the difference between those two. And that's the thing. And that's much easier, theoretically, for an adult who has developed some internal senses than it has been for a kid. So a kid needs to look to the example of the parent, of the mentor, of the teacher, and how they're managing it.
Friday, it's our Life Matters Talkback Day, and we're talking about smartphones. Are we too connected? Are we hyper-connected? And at what cost? That's our discussion today. The number to call is 1300 225576. 1300 call RN. Metaporia has written to us on Twitter. Socrates said writing would make us lose our memory and would ruin our ability to argue. So here we are again, repeating the conversation. Loose ID writes, I'm developing a serious Twitter addiction. Help! I think this is, I would be inclined to say that there are a lot of people who are tweeting 24 hours a day if they can. Let's come to some calls. Justine in Victoria. Justine, you're holding out on getting a mobile phone altogether.
At all, that's correct.
At all.
Yep. I believe I'm one of the 5%. Neither my beau nor I have any kind of phone.
Now, why? I think you're a unique specimen and this is fantastic.
Could be. Look, I'm not impractical. If work required it, I probably would get one. But as long as I can hold out, it's a personal choice I can't really explain, except the sort of longer it goes on, the more I realise in some ways why. I guess I can see my own propensity to addiction as well, you know, to checking emails all the time and things like that. But I'm like Pauline. I live in Melbourne. I catch a tram and, you know, I look around and everybody's got their head down. Look, in, you know, there must be a dozen people I could count at any time around me who have their head bent. And I remember reading some years ago that every centimetre your head's forward, you know, your head becomes heavier and heavier and people are frowning. There's fewer spontaneous conversations, you know, on the tram itself. I could be have an ill-placed indignation, though. You know, I think that if everyone was reading a book, would I feel the same? You know, sort of disconnected.
I'm not sure. There's maybe a pride in your dissent.
There might be.
Fantastic to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Good, you're welcome. Thanks.
Philippa in Tasmania, you have an autistic daughter and you've got an interesting take on smartphones.
Yeah, not only do I use it for all of her appointments that she has, I mean, she has a lot of speech, occupational therapies and things like that, but she actually uses it also. She's really, really good on it. She's completely non-verbal, but she's really good at using the apps and everything. And in the future, she'll probably eventually be using it as a communication device.
So it's really transformed her, what she's capable of.
Yes, yeah. She at the moment uses physical pictures to communicate with people, just on little pieces of card. But they're developing apps now where she can just go through those pictures on the phone, scroll through them, and then show them to somebody, and she can communicate with whoever and wherever.
I can see Mark Pesci nodding his head furiously at this one. Do you have a comment to make?
Well, it's been an interesting thing, I think, particularly with smartphones and with tablets, no one had really expected this, but when autistic children are given these, they actually there's a resonance there, and they're able to explore it, and it seems to open up a communication channel that they didn't have before, which is exactly what this caller is saying. Mm. And it's a wonderful thing, and because of that, we are seeing apps being developed. And if you think about about, for instance, Stephen Hawking, who, you know, has MLS and so can't use his vocal cords. He uses a computer to find the words to talk. We're doing something analogous to that for people who have another kind of communication deficit.
Yes, it's Andy Clark's idea of our technology being like a cognitive scaffolding for our minds. Yeah. Thank you very much, Philippa.
Thanks.
Murray in Victoria. You're interested in how all this might change our social relationships, damage them even.
Yeah, I think connectivity for a lot of people creates the illusion of communication and relationships and community. And this is a large uncontrolled social experiment. I believe you've had Sherry Turkle on the phone.
We have. I love Sherry's work.
Yeah, and she talks very convincingly about not only the social consequences and changes in people's relationships and their ability to have relationships. She quotes in one of her books an 18-year-old man who said to her, "Look, I'd love to learn to have a conversation, but I haven't got time at the moment." And I reckon that her research also shows that there are structural changes and functional brain changes as a result of exposure to phones and other electronic media.
I think it's too early to tell that.
I don't know that it is. I think that there's very convincing research available to show that people's brain structure and the neurophysiology. I mean, we know so much now more about what happens at the microscopic neurological level and how it can physically, structurally, anatomically change brain development in many different ways. I think, you know, I love my phone. I use it for all sorts of work-related things and wouldn't be without the camera and the maps and the professional references that I've got stored on it.
But you have doubts.
But no, I've got very serious concerns. I think we're in the middle of a huge uncontrolled change in the way the large part of the world engages in relationships, and maybe to the detriment of our ability to have true and meaningful relationships.
Murray, thanks so much for that call. And I just want to read out, Loose ID has replied to us on Twitter and he says, "Hey, thanks for mentioning my tweet, but that affirmation is bound to worsen my addiction." That's the hit, connectivity. So we're in trouble now. Mark Pesci, Sherry Turkle's trajectory has been really interesting because she's been writing about social relationships and technology for a long time. She's from MIT.
35 years.
Exactly, but she's had a little shift of late. Yes. And she feels very concerned that we've come to a point finding a new way of being alone together. Mm-hmm. And at what cost, she says, at what cost? We feel like we're in control, but in fact, we're failing ourselves. We've become so uncomfortable with solitude and just being alone and disconnected.
Yeah. And I guess this is very much the bleeding edge that we're negotiating right now. We have literally transitioned from a world where we were essentially disconnected all of the time, and that is a half a billion seconds ago, 1995-ish, into a world where we are basically continuously connected now. And we haven't really learned a whole lot about how to negotiate what that means. Now, I really do take issue with people who say that this is ruining our relationships because, you know, my dad's in Southern California and I talk to him every afternoon. Mm. And I can do that because we both have smartphones and Skype and Magic and things like this. And we have this very strong and growing relationship because of it that would have been impossible. If this was 20 years ago, I would have talked to him once a month, right, on a very expensive phone call. So I think we get to have a choice now about how we structure our relationships. We didn't have a choice before. We just sort of took them as they came. Maybe what we need to do is understand the quality of that choice and what that choice means in terms of consequences for us.
Mark, Sherry said, you know, we expect more of our technology and less of each other and that human relationships are messy. Mm. But what we find in our smartphone when we interact with Facebook or Twitter or we text is a sort of sense of control over that messiness. And she's wondering about the cost that comes with all that control, that we'd rather text than talk because it gives us control.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, you think about this. I follow and am followed by a lot of people on Twitter, and occasionally people will act up. And I'm always debating, well, do I block this person or not? Do I want to keep that mess around? Do I want to keep this unfinished end that's going to disagree with me and challenge me and confront me? Or do I just want to shut that down? And that is, that's the bleeding edge. This is the choice in some sense that we're all being offered. I don't think we're always going to take the easy way out.
This is the Laugh Matters for... Oh. We're not, no, well, let's leave that hanging because I'd like to bring in another guest now. Let me remind people where they are in the universe, and you may indeed be listening from your phone. This is Radio National. You're with Laugh Matters. I'm Natasha Mitchell. My guest is Mark Pesce, writer and futurist. And we're talking about whether or not we've become, in a sense, addicted. I think that's a loaded term, but in a sense, addicted to our telephones, particularly those internet connected smartphones. Constant connectivity and at what cost? The number to call is 1300 225 76 or 1300. Call RN if you're having troubles getting through. 0283 1430 is our message line. 0283 1430. And some of you are tweeting us, and we're at RN Life Matters. Use the hashtag #ABCRN, and we'll keep a track of you throughout the discussion. I'm bringing in Mark Iden now because the question of when we disconnect is what we're going to talk about now. Is it possible, and particularly in those times when we went on holidays, we would traditionally disconnect from life as we know it and open our minds and hearts to new possibilities? Mark Iden is on the line now from his home in Victoria. He's an ABC Open producer in Ballarat. Mark, welcome.
Hello.
Great to have you on the show. You wrote a great little story about travelling to Cambodia earlier this year, and you took your smartphone. Did you do that with some trepidation?
Yeah. Originally, it was I'll bring the phone because I want to bring some music with me, and I want to be able to listen to some music. And for emergency situations, to have a phone. You know, we just feel that more secure to have that phone nearby. And so we got into Cambodia in April, and I bought a SIM card.
Uh-huh.
It was really easy.
So you bought a SIM card. Yeah, that's where it all went downhill.
It all went downhill. And after a week, there was just this temptation to start surfing the net, looking for accommodation, and I really started to depend on that smartphone. And I was listening to Mark earlier. I had that experience of sitting by a beautiful beach, a lovely location, and looking down at my smartphone, not looking around me anymore, looking down, and I started cleaning up my emails. I was sort of like, I'm on holiday. I've got time on my hands. I should just clean up some of these files. And then I spent all this time selecting. I don't want to listen to that music. I've got 1,000 songs. I'll make a playlist. And the power of the tool. It's such an amazing tool. I just got completely into it.
And then at what cost to your holiday?
It was just very unnerving. It was good to have there, but I just, you know, I had to catch myself. I was on a bus going between Siem Reap and Battambang. It's about 4 hours.
An incredible landscape to look at too.
Yeah. So in the past when I'm travelling, I'd be looking out the window and just sort of really taking in the experience. And there I was listening to music, checking out the news back home, reading up about Peter Slipper and what's going on in Parliament.
You're news junkie.
checking all the news sites. And I just had to remind myself to sort of, you know, to stop. And the other interesting thing is I didn't buy any books. I don't carry any books. I was just reading online articles, just having that quick sort of reading sort of experience. So it was concerning, and I had to stop.
You had to stop
last week,
and you did that. I'm interested in how having a smartphone has changed your experience of holidays from the past. Like, what would you have done in the past? How would you have planned a holiday and had a holiday overseas before you had a phone?
Well, traveling, my wife and I, we always we book one night's accommodation, and then we just make it up as we go. And we usually talk to people, we'll bring guidebooks with us, and we'll have that experience. we'll have that experience there. And now we're looking at comments on hotel sites and looking what other people say. So rather than talking to people who've had that experience, I mean, it's just another way of doing it. But after talking to some people going to these hotels or guest houses, their main thing is like, can you, if you really enjoyed the experience here, can you write a comment? It's this. It's such an economy of comments now, and especially when you've got a smartphone, you can do these things portable with Wi-Fi.
You can just get totally lost in it, though, on your holiday, can't you? There's an interesting tension and tango for you here, isn't there, Mark? Because in some sense, having this ultra-portable, ultra-connected technology has revolutionised the way you work as a journalist. But I've often wondered whether it means that I'm missing out on other stories that I might just see in the world, glean by observation and conversation, that's not digitally mediated.
Yeah, that's right. I guess it's just, it's like, you know, it's like TV, you just got to turn it off if you're not into it, sort of thing. But the thing with the smartphone, I'm into it. I'm into all the tools that it sort of provides, and probably into too much. And being overseas, you really, for me, the experience is to turn everything off and open your eyes up a bit more and take in the surrounds and the people. And I guess what I was doing was reconnecting with back home and all the usual habits of reading the news and things like that, rather than taking in the experiences of just talking to people,
exactly,
and finding out the stories that are happening,
and letting it all just wash over you. Mark Iden, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you. Mark's the ABC Open producer in Ballarat. Mark Pesci is also in the studio with me. He's wanting to say something right now.
You know, you brought up the word addiction a little while ago, and I think after listening to Mark, I think we don't want to use the word addiction. I think we want to use the word conditioned. That's the thing. We're conditioned by our devices to behave in a certain way. Oh, wait, I've got some free time. I can check the email. I can tweet. I can Facebook. That's what we're used to doing. And the interesting thing about it, the holidays, it presents that space where we can decondition ourselves. That's actually, in a sense, the best use of our time on a holiday is to break all of our habits and to do something completely different. And maybe that's what we need to remember when we go on holidays now. I mean, I'm saying this to myself because I'm going to go back to Thailand on holidays next month. And I'm like, gee, I really enjoyed.
I dare you to not take your phone.
Oh, that, no, I can't.
I agree, the fear, let me tell you people, the fear that went through his face.
Yeah. Well, it's just because my first thought is, well, what do I do if I get into trouble? Right? It's not so much, oh, I won't be able to tweet. It's what happens if I have a problem? Because just as much as the phone is conditioned, it's also become the common lifeline. We now have this situation where bushwalkers are walking into all of our national forests with their smartphones, with their maps, going, oh, I'll be able to find my way out. And they walk in far enough and then there's no signal. And this is the first time that they've realized that perhaps they won't be able to get out. And now we're seeing an uptick in the number of rescues that are necessary because people don't realize that when they get beyond signal range, they lose a lot of what they had.
They've lost that self-awareness of their environment in some sense. Tweets coming in thick and fast. Ben writes, I wouldn't be without my, where is he? Oh, they're coming in too fast on the screen. Ben writes, I love mine. I'd be lost without it, quite literally. Matt writes, I'm interested in science, art, music, books, politics, tech. Social media lets me participate in multiple worlds. Let's come to some calls because they're coming in too. Look, I'm trying to multitask here in the studio. It's exhausting. Jonathan in Sydney, you went on holiday for 2 or 3 months, quite particularly didn't take your phone.
No, last year, 3 months in southern Europe, France and Italy, and we sort of camped and then probably about a quarter or a fifth of the time stayed in hotels. We decided not to take a mobile, GPS or a computer, didn't even go into a cafe to use a computer. That was 3 months last year and 2 months the previous year, and it's just so nice to get away from it all. I mean, I personally use a lot of computers, but just to get away from it all, it's just so liberating, and no problems at all. You know, the people you meet and speak to, and you ask questions. I think we bought 2 or 3 of those old things called paper maps.
which are beautiful objects. So nice, they're lovely and tactile, but incredibly cumbersome trying to fold them back up when you're travelling.
They're not that bad. I mean, if you're sort of careful not to buy too many, then we've got them now, and we've sort of run a texture over them to highlight where we went. And just lots of little things, like when you're travelling around, you know, because you have to go and ask people, so you end up talking to people and finding out their life story. Or I mean, one situation we were sitting down somewhere and we'd had asked something earlier, and then this lovely Italian lady just out of the blue just brought us out 2 glasses of wine. You know,
there you go.
And this is in a mildly touristy area.
Wow. And if you were looking down at your phone, you might lose that possibility. That possibility might be lost for you. Jonathan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Melissa in New South Wales. Well, you've got something to say about GPS and maps.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere that our reliance on map reading is actually changing the structure of our brain, that linked in to our nomadic existence where we use geography naturally and we're aware of the world and worked out our orientation, that because that set up something like a structure within our brain, that's actually evolving and losing that function. I mean, I love my smartphone as well, but I don't use a lot of the functions. But what do you think of that?
Well, Mark, what do you think of that? Certainly, I mean, it's a case of, you know, if you use your brain, if you use parts of your brain, they become enhanced, don't they? But the data is a little bit dubious on this. But we think of those London taxi drivers.
Yeah.
They learnt the map of London. They had more neurons in their hippocampus which is involved in the laying down of new memories.
Right. I mean, we think about it, who does long division anymore? We don't, because there's always a calculator at hand now. And it may very well be that our relationship to the space is following something like that. For the things that are closest to us, yes, we will reckon by dead reckoning. For things that are more distant, we probably will use our devices. I think it's interesting listening to the caller who'd spent time in Europe and the fact that he was forced by the decisions he'd made to interact. That actually tells me that there's probably a way to think about, because a lot of the way that we interact with our phones is based sort of on the designs, the way they want us to interact with them. You could actually design a phone that would help you connect with the people that were around you, that would let you know this person can help you and would offer that opportunity to do the introduction. You know, we have these dating apps that do this. Well, you could do that for a travel app too. And so you could actually think that the smartphone could actually help facilitate the social connection rather than separate you. And I think that there will be, as we feel that need, that people will start to write apps that fill that need.
Yes, but do we lose a measure of spontaneity? Melissa, you've got a follow-up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just wondering, though, do you think it's possible that the apps might consider their responsibility to making sure that we do maintain that part of our brain function? And maybe if you're saying they can adapt, maybe they will put in a question or something and say, have a guess first where you might be going.
Great suggestion. Thank you, Melissa, very much. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? That we program into our apps the possibility of exercising dimensions of the brain that we might be losing.
Well, you've got those brain improvement apps, right, that probably don't really work as well as they've been advertised. But you could now see that there's a leading edge of apps that actually would be good. Use this app if you want to help improve your sense of direction or so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think you could definitely see things going that way.
Or we could just walk out into the world and we might not need an app for that sort of thing. Let's take some more calls. The number to call for our Friday talkback in the last 10 minutes or so is 1300 22 55 76 or 1300 call RN. We're talking about smartphones. How many times do you check your phone every day? Tweet, Facebook, the whole shebang. Do you feel lost if you, say, flush your smartphone down the toilet? It falls out the back pocket. I know a few people who've done that. Do you feel that this constant connectedness is killing our creativity, killing our sort of sense of letting our mind wander? Get in touch, 1300 225576. Naveen in Queensland, you're an established iPhone user.
Yes, I am. But I've got to say, I started off pretty late, only about, say, 3 years ago. And I was amazed at, you know, what I could achieve with it. And I guess here in Australia, we have the infrastructure available that we can use smart technologies such as this. And now I use it when I travel, you know, to keep in touch with my daughter, for example, also we were in Singapore a few months ago, and I was waiting for at a bus stop. So, and I wanted to know where to go from a certain place, from one place to the other. And this lady goes, "Oh, there's an app available. You can download it. It'll tell you when the next bus is and where you want to go." So, I mean, that was handy for me. So, the other thing is, I believe, I mean, this is a byproduct of the times we live in. For example, as you may be all aware, like this, in 1 year we generate 4 exabytes of data. That's 4 × 10⁻¹⁹ data that it would, and that's more than what was generated in 5,000 years ago. This technology is advancing.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I think we are in a fortunate position, like Australia and places like Singapore, where we have the infrastructure to harness that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm losing a lot of control over my personal digital data, I have to say. Thanks so much, Naveen. Appreciate the call. Belinda in New South Wales. You're making observations of young people, and actually we had a message on our website as well commenting about posture and worrying about young people and posture, although you're going to make a different point. Belinda.
Hi. I was going to think, talking about what Mark said earlier that around that he calls his dad, and I think for us kind of older people, those relationships are established face-to-face, and so, you know, smartphones, et cetera, become an adjunct to those. Whereas for young people, they're often the primary source of communication. And, I mean, not only does that affect the actual method of communication, but also just that being online all the time. I mean, I once overheard a person on the bus, a young person who said, "Oh my God, I went to the toilet and I forgot my iPhone and I was so bored." And, just to have that sense of, you know, not even for a moment be able to be occupied.
I totally relate to that, I think. Oh dear, thanks very much for that, Belinda.
No worries, thanks.
Peter in Highway, look, you have a concern about smartphones and your relationship.
That's correct. Hello this morning.
What was that?
Yes, that's correct. Can you?
Yes, we can hear you. It sounds like you're on the road, so we ask you to be careful. But why do you think smartphones are ruining your relationship with your wife?
Absolutely. Like, if I don't answer the phone, and I miss a phone call because I'm in a meeting or something like that, then she will get onto Twitter, Facebook, email me, and if I don't answer hers, then we have to end up in huge arguments because I'm not answering the phone. And for whatever reason, I don't answer the phone. It might be because the battery's flat, or as I said, I might be in a meeting, or like now I'm driving and the hands-free doesn't work. And then I've got to justify why I didn't answer the phone when she called me and why I'm not available, and she feels very secure.
So she has massive expectations. She has big expectations of your not connectivity.
That's right. And then obviously what steps in then is the fact that if I don't answer the phone, say, 7 o'clock, I'm in bed. I've had a hard day at work. I do a lot of travelling for work. And so then she then thinks I'm out partying or doing something which I shouldn't be doing because I didn't answer the phone.
All right, Peter, thanks very much for that call. Can I come to Mark Pesci? I want to just, in the last little while, shift the conversation to the question of privacy and who owns our data when we use smartphones. This is a really critical question. And we've had a tweet from RUA Lert. It's hard to read people's Twitter names. And they say, never sure when to allow apps to have my location and if it should be controlled. So let's come to this question of our identities being tethered, not just to each other via the various apps on our mobile phone, but to the corporations that bring us this technology. Tell us about your concerns there.
I mean, the first thing we have to recognize is that your mobile carrier knows every move that you make because they're tracking where your mobile is. And if your mobile is basically near your body all the time, they always know where you are. And we never think about that, but it's always true.
Mm.
Then you have to think about the fact that all of the products of your searches, of your sharing, all of that stuff is going through whatever org, whether you're using Facebook or using Twitter or using Google. When it's passing through the mobile, it's leaving a record. So you're building up what they call a data shadow.
Now, why is that a concern? Is it about who's got access to that information, how it might be used in the future in ways that we can't anticipate?
That I think that's definitely part of it. I think it's also, how is it being used in order to make the device more alluring? How is it being used to wrest control of that relationship away from us? Mm. Because if we're talking, and we really have talked this hour about this very sort of strong relationship, and because it's strong, that we need to have a degree of caution around it. And when you start putting other elements into it that are well beyond our own control, that can affect the nature of that relationship, mm. and that you're unaware of, then what you've done is you've made that process of awareness even harder.
And I think people are so very well aware of, just thinking tin tacks here, like the GPS function on their phones. This is the question that's coming on Twitter. I've been in a situation where I've seen people busy tweeting away and they don't know that they're attaching their home address to every tweet because they've got that it's attached to where they're located. Right. And they're actually located on their lounge room, you know, in their right. lounge room, busy tweeting away, and their personal address is being tweeted, which is very risky in some people's situations.
Yeah, well, I would think in most situations when an app asks to know your location, it probably doesn't really need to know it. Sometimes it does. If it's a map and it's trying to find you, then it's going to need to know your location. If it's Twitter, it just wants to share that information around, which is sometimes you want to share it, sometimes you don't. And so you really have to think very carefully before you grant an app that privilege, because it may use that privilege to help bring you better information. It may use that privilege in order to share that information around. And so that's a very fine
line.
In
what ways? In what ways might that information be shared around?
Well, as the example you gave, it's being attached to a tweet so that anyone who sees the tweet knows where the tweet was sent from, or with a Facebook post, or with, say, you're rating something on Yelp or anything else. So there's a lot of apps that bring a degree of, or Foursquare is a very big example, bring a degree of location information in to help provide what they call metadata, extra information to what you're sharing to help sort of bring that into context so that people can say, okay, what did everyone share around Ultimo today? What did everyone share around Chippendale? It allows people to
search. It all feels
search.
Very friendly, but I often wonder whether there's an insidious side to it all.
Well, I think, I mean, again, data by itself is very neutral. It's how that data is put to work and how particular types of data, and location data is very personal because that is around your movements. And to the degree that you want to remain mysterious, you don't want to give that data away.
I'd like to come to Chris in Queensland. Chris, you've got a big picture take on all this.
Yes, I suppose so. I mean, I've got a smartphone. I don't particularly like them, but I do use them, and I don't like the non-talking aspect that seems to have crept in. But really, it strikes me that is this the way that humans are going to try and achieve the collective consciousness? I mean, we always, maybe if we've thought about it optimistically in the past, it's through some sort of brain connection, some sort of human evolution that will somehow link our brains in some sort of way. But it strikes me that we're in fact maybe bringing this is how we're going to do it, a combination of human and technology. And I just wonder if you think that that's maybe this is the beginning of that major evolutionary change.
The great big global brain. Mark Pesci.
Well, this is really the theme of the book that I'm working on right now. Yeah, it's that I don't think we're beginning it. I think we're actually rather toward the end of it. That's the interesting thing. It's become quite visible now. The fact that I can reach into my smartphone and get the collected wisdom of a couple of billion other people, and that can then help guide my decisions so that I can make better decisions, that's working for all of us. So we're actually all getting a lot of benefit. There's obviously a lot of trade-offs here, and we're now negotiating those trade-offs. What's worth losing? What's worth keeping? And how hard are we going to have to work to keep it?
Can I read a comment here? Eldon has written on Twitter, we also don't have mobile phones and are very happy, thereby we're not always on call. We're still online via Pooters, though. And a comment's been made via Nora. She says, this talkback has underlined the digital divide. Some people do not have good enough internet access for a smartphone. Mm. Big issue in Australia, isn't it?
It's a big issue everywhere. Although, interestingly, there was a report published yesterday. By 2017, so 5 years from now, 85% of the population of the planet will have high-speed broadband mobile. So at least 85% of us will have the capability of it. But yes, if you go out of an urban center in Australia, your broadband just drops off.
Big issue. Mark, it's been great having you on the program today. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Mark Pesce is a writer, a futurist, a commentator, an inventor, and we'll link to his website on the Life Matters website too. Thanks for all your calls today. Keep all the comments coming. Get on our Facebook page or our website or our listener line 0283334030. Let me thank the team. Today's Talkback was produced by Jane Shields. Our sound engineer is David Lawford. Thanks to the rest of the team, executive producer Julie Browning, producers Lindy Rain, Tracy Tromf, Gina McEwen, and sound engineer Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. We love talking to you throughout the week. Looking forward to your company on Monday. On Monday, it's Why Be Married When You Can Be Happy? Michael Cathcart coming up next.